Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, June 28th, 2011. Tech News Today is brought to you by FreshBooks, the easy online invoicing service that gets you paid quickly and makes you look professional. Get started with a free package at FreshBooks.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Jason Howell.
We don't have anyone else on the show today.
Ayaz has the day off.
Yeah, he took my birthday off.
And no one else really wanted to be part of your birthday show,
it's
I guess.
It was
a tech snub.
Lots of creative excuses, people washing their hair.
I'm coming back from a vacation.
Yeah.
I'm too zen to do this.
Oh,
that sort
what
of
what time
thing.
Is it? I think I'm busy then.
Oh, you meant Pacific time.
Yeah, so anyway.
We've heard it all.
Screw them.
We don't need them.
We're going to talk about Google Plus. The newest social network.
Now,
forget Orkut. Forget Buzz. This is the Google social network.
Google Plus, is that the same thing as Plus One? That little button that no one's using?
Yeah, apparently that button was sort of the pioneer of Google Plus. Google Plus is now the kind of the wider name. And remember we heard all those rumors about Google Circles?
Yes.
Google Circles is an element of Google Plus.
So Google Plus is now a very wide social networky aspect to Google itself. It's not just one little side project.
It kind of feels like maybe if they didn't get it right, they at least got really close this time. Because they're not.
Is that really what you're saying?
I'm really saying that.
Because none of us have been able to use Google Plus yet.
Well, let me explain. Okay. It breaks down into five different pieces. Circles allows you to create groups of friends by dragging names from your Google contacts or your Gmail contacts. So it sounds like it's much easier to create groups. Because the first thing you think is like, oh, great. I got to create another list of people I like.
Yes.
But it works like Twitter, which is like you don't have to get them to agree. You put them in your circle, and then certain things happen. They can put you in their circle, but it reduces the privacy implications because you're only sharing with them. You're not forcing them to share with you. Remember, like Google Buzz did.
Right. I like the idea of this. I just don't know how many people realistically want to get that organized about Google contacts.
Right. Well, it's easy.
You know, we say
it seems like
they make it easy. I have heard it's downright fun to kind of create a circle, but at the same time,
because it's drag and drop,
you compare it to something like a Twitter list. A lot of people don't use Twitter lists to their potential because they just don't really see the need. I think a small
Twitter
number
lists
of people
are really hard to create. I mean, they're not really hard.
No, they're not.
But they're more difficult to create than this.
Yeah. So it's maybe the Twitter list better
they're
realized.
They're impossible to create.
I've never been able to do it.
And it seems like it's very similar to in Facebook, how you can create those lists and everything. But that's all, like you said, that's all text-based.
Yeah.
And it just kind of gets...
It's tedious.
It's tedious and it just kind of gets boring. And this seems like the drag and drop method, the big bubbly graphics. I don't know. It just seems a little bit more pleasing. Like you'd be interested more to actually set that up.
Also, historically, Google has been maybe the last company that's been associated with something that's fun and not text-based.
Right. They
do a lot of things right, but this is a different thing.
They're also trying to make it easy to share. They have a black bar, which actually have... that's going to be across the top of all their properties. So Gmail, Google Docs, all that stuff. You'll see this black bar across the top. And that's where you'll be able to access sharing whatever it is you want to share, whether it's pictures or links or this or that.
Mm-hmm.
You'll operate it all from that black bar. So it's ubiquitous. You're signed into Google. You're doing Google stuff. It's there. It's not, you know, weighing down upon you. You don't have to go to a special location. It's just kind of there if you need it. Sparks is a part of it. They call Sparks that lets you search an interest and add it to a list. This is the part I don't quite. This is the least understandable part.
Yeah, I don't get this one. Is it just like Google Reader essentially? You're putting in interests and certain news articles from Google Reader are feeding in.
They say you're only searching interests.
I think it's somewhere between just a general search and something like Google Reader. I think what Google's trying to do is say we've got this huge database of information, and it's too big, and there's no categorization at all. So let's say that you're really into water skiing, and you search water skiing. Google is now going to attempt to group together a lot of results that relate to what you're interested in, rather than just anything that has the search term water skiing is just going to show up, whether it's just a bunch of junk or not. What I'm wondering about is, how are they going to integrate ads into this? Because if you could search for something and you're going to get a targeted result that would keep you out of regular Google search, Google doesn't want to do that and lose out on all of their ad results.
I bet they're probably still going to put ads in there somewhere.
Yeah, but that's more annoying because if you're trying to be more targeted, then it could get more manipulative.
But the ads are targeted. AdSense works that way, so it could dovetail.
It almost could be
to where the ads are just as relevant as the stuff you're searching.
Yeah, rather than ads that show up because of a conversation you had in your latest Gmail
exchange.
Right,
exactly. Which to always is just hilarious.
Weird.
Would you like to buy Sarah Lane on eBay?
No,
I don't think that's
actually not for sale.
Wait a minute. Maybe I should and see what you mean by that.
Instant upload will allow you to add video and pictures via Android apps. So you're out, you take a picture, snap some video. Wait, you snap a picture, you take some video, and then it automatically will put stuff up. Yeah, I mean, you get to choose it, but it just uploads it. So it immediately goes into your, you probably shouldn't have shot that video that they're showing.
Right? Oh, I guess not. Yeah.
Here, that's sort of embarrassing.
They're having a good time.
No, they're having a great time. Yeah. I'm just kidding.
It actually brings it right into there in a private folder so that you can then choose from all the things that have uploaded over that amount of time.
And then you want to share public. Them, but they're always available.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. I like that idea.
Huddle allows you to send messages across Android, iOS, and SMS. So you say to a group, you've created these groups, right?
Group messaging.
And then the idea here, too, is Google is saying, instead of being friends with everyone in the world and talking to everyone at once, you have your family group, you have your work group, you have your, I'm interested in water skiing group.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you want to send a message like, hey, I want to talk about the new water skiing park, you just send it to that group, and they would get it wherever they are, whether they're on their app or on SMS.
Mm-hmm. I like this idea. It's just, you can do this every which way and
so
sideways.
Many group messaging
apps.
Yeah,
I mean, group messaging is, we're all used to it, and some people are already loyal to Facebook groups, for example, or their favorite apps. I use a group messaging app on iOS that works just great, and we've already kind of got our group. So I feel like they're a little late to the game here, but it doesn't mean that they won't be better.
I think the bet is if you start using all of this other stuff,
you're
be
already
convenient
there.
To use their
well, this is
group
the, Google's issue has always been, and it's worked for them for a long time, is use our service, get your information, and bounce. We're information, we're not a place.
Yeah.
And this is all about now, Google is a place. You go in and you hang out and you don't have to leave. It's a lot more like Facebook.
Vic Gundotra said, how can you organize the world's information without people? Or something like that. Finally, Hangout is a group video chat part of Google Plus that allows you to, take your group, maybe on Huddle, you say, let's do a group video chat. And then you all join in and everybody shows up on the screen while they're talking automatically. You don't have to switch between them, right?
Yeah, no, I would say that this to me is the most exciting aspect of what they're rolling out here, because there really isn't, like, Facebook isn't doing this right now. Maybe they will eventually, but they aren't. And essentially, you can
Skype isn't even doing this.
You can have this group conversation, and the minute someone on another camera starts talking, they take the main screen and everybody else's chat windows. And so you're actually having a conversation without any need of chatting or switching the cameras. You can also do things like have a shared viewing experience with YouTube. So you can put up, you can propose and push a YouTube video out to everybody else's player and watch it and talk and discuss it and hang out.
I wonder if we could use that on Twit.
It sounds like something that we would love to have. I just wonder, we all know that sometimes on Skype there's a little bit of a lag and people might talk over each other. How is it, does it give you, after 3 seconds of someone talking, where it seems like they finally have the floor, then it switches? What if we're all singing together, for example?
Yeah, that's a
What's
good
it
question.
Gonna do?
I don't know.
It's hard to know how buggy that might be, but the concept is awesome.
Concept is awesome. Yeah.
And it seems all reports are that it works pretty seamlessly, that there's not much lag.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, from what I understand about it, it's a pretty solid experience. I've heard that they've been, I mean, I would imagine Google, you know, they dog food their stuff a lot. And I imagine from the inside,
that means they've probably used their own products internally.
Did I just do that jargon drop?
Did.
Sorry about that.
It's okay.
We heard it the other day. So,
yeah.
But anyway, so I'm sure they've been testing this internally before pushing it out and using it for, you know, stuff inside.
It's very limited rollout right now. You have to be invited in. They have had a few beta testers outside of Google trying it out ahead of time. They're now ready to announce that they don't want to make a big deal out of it. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So just everybody settle down. They've told the press, you know, this is not a big deal. Don't get all hyped out about it. It's not perfect yet. We just want people to use it, and we want to tell everyone about it. But we don't want you to have any expectations.
It's not a big deal. It's just the next evolution of Google. That's why it's called Google Plus.
But
not a big
deal. Just hold
off. Not a big deal.
On the expectations.
But here's the problem with that is Google has said that with many other projects before, and it has not worked out in their favor because something gets rolled out and Google says, we're still trying to figure out what the perfect special sauce is. Don't worry about it. Give us feedback and we'll make it better. And people just don't stick around for it to get better.
Yeah, I think it's smart to take it in limited areas out into the public and improve it as you get that real time
experience.
You have
to take it out of engineering to know if it's really going to work
or not.
You
have to take it off campus and run into things that you would never run into otherwise. So that's smart, but I mean, I don't think you can expect that the press is not going to make this the top story on their podcast, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
On a day like today, anyway. But if you'd like to get your email address in there and hope that Google will invite you in sooner than later, plus.google.com is the place. Where you go. Microsoft also had a big announcement today. Office 365 has officially launched. It's been in beta for a few months. And Steve Ballmer got up on stage in New York. They also had an event in London. Office 365 puts email, word processing, spreadsheet collaboration, all on the web. Also, I mean, this is a business product, not a consumer product. So it's got Exchange, Link Online, SharePoint. You can access it from your computer and your tablet and your phone. Microsoft Windows Phone, RIM, Apple, Android, all can access Office 365. It is the replacement for Business Productivity Online Standards Suite. So if your company has been using that, this is the next version of that with a new name, Office 365. It is not a replacement for Word Online. If you've been using the live version of Word,
mm-hmm.
you know, just as a consumer, this doesn't replace that. A company has to pay for this. And as with all things Microsoft, we have a very simple, straightforward set of 11 programs across four tiers that you can choose from.
Are you a big business or a small business? How
many
employees do you
have? Are you a small big business or a really big small business?
What kind of work do you do? And how clueless are your employees?
$6 per user per month for email, web-based calendaring, and contacts and collaboration software if your business has fewer than 25 folks. If it's a larger business, it's $2 per user per month for all of that stuff. For just an email services package. And then they have different tiers all the way up to $27 per user per month if you want voice and video communications and the whole ball of wax.
Of course, it's hard for me not to just compare this to something like the Google App Suite, which is, what, $5 per month for an organization for however many people you want to add?
$50 a year or $5 per month per seat, per license, yeah.
And we are Google Apps users at Twit, so I think to myself, well, the Microsoft offering does not seem like it makes a lot of sense financially, but it always depends on who you have working for you and what they're comfortable doing. In fact, I do remember Liz just the other day saying, Google Spreadsheets does not work like Excel in the certain way that I need it. I hate this. Maybe 365 will work with her, will work for her in that way.
And it is integrated with regular Microsoft Office, so she could use Office
right.
to do her spreadsheet the way she wants to and then upload it to Office 365. Google was out there taking swipes. Shan Sinha, Google Apps product manager, wrote on the official Google blog all kinds of reasons why you should choose mm-hmm. Google over Office 365, saying it was better to start with a new technology rather than add extras to an aging one, talked about the price, all of that stuff. But the fact of the matter is, Microsoft's already in the enterprise.
Yeah.
So all they've got to do is show up to their client and say, hey, you know what? We can lower your costs and put you in the cloud today.
Exactly. How's this option?
Yeah. You know, rather than switching to something new and scary that you've never tried before. Google's making some inroads, but they're not nearly present in the enterprise the way Microsoft is.
Yeah, Google also seems to want to lead people to believe that the Microsoft cloud service is very much for an individual to have stuff in the cloud, and Google is more of a collaborative tool.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they're both collaborative tools. Well, I don't really know why Google would say that they're more collaborative.
Microsoft's been doing SharePoint forever.
Yeah.
I mean,
and this is... has the same functionality.
They've been doing collaboration in this. Yeah, exactly. SharePoint is among the tools in Office 365. Also, Bell Canada, Intuit, NTT Communications, Telefonica, Telstra, and Vodafone are some of the partners that have announced they will resell Office 365. I guess the advantage there is if you're already doing business with these telecoms for certain infrastructure or mm-hmm. cell phone packages, you might be able to get a discount or some kind of integration in there as well.
Well, you just don't have to teach anybody how to use anything else besides Microsoft products.
Yeah.
It's probably just going to be more familiar, and some people might dish out a little bit more money than they need to just keep things easy.
I also like the fact that Microsoft will host it for you.
Mm-hmm.
They'll even give you a dedicated server if you want, or you can host it in your own data center. So it does give the enterprise some flexibility that they don't get elsewhere as well. T-Mobile has announced the MyTouch 4G slide. Lots of hands-on reviews starting to come out on the web today. Think of it as sort of the HTC Sensation with a slide-out keyboard. There's some other differences in there. MyTouch 4G slide has a 1.2 gigahertz dual-core Snapdragon processor, only a 3.7-inch super LCD screen, but it still has the 8-megapixel camera, the ability to record in 1080p, modified Sense UI. I think it's still on the second fastest of T-Mobile's 4G networks, what they call 4G. It's HSPA+, gets you about 14.4 megabits per second. But what's got everybody all excited is the camera.
8 megapixels.
Megapixels?
Yeah.
Yeah. 8-megapixel camera with dual LED flash. They're saying it's zero shutter lag. Backside illuminated sensor, F2 aperture lens, all included.
Not to mention 1080p video recording.
Other camera-centric features include panoramic photo, HDR, something called burst shot, you know, takes a bunch mm-hmm. of pictures at once. This has got the camera geeks saying, you know, I got an F2 aperture lens. I have this thing with me all the time. I've got a really good camera.
This is better than a very good point-and-shoot that I take on all my vacations, which takes nice pictures. But then it's everything. I mean, this is a cool, small camera that you can slide in your pocket and go and take with you wherever. But then it's also a computer.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost like a camera first because it's such an awesome camera with all of this other stuff.
So if you're really into photography, above all other things.
I don't think you can do better than this.
You might want to.
At least not right now.
Check this out. It's an Android phone, by the way. I don't think we mentioned that. I can't remember if it's Android 2.3. I did not write that.
2.3.
It is 2.3.
Yes.
Okay, look at that. I actually remembered something for once in my life. let's take a quick break and thank FreshBooks for their sponsorship of Tech News Today. You know, I went to Podcasters Across Borders in Ottawa this weekend,
mm-hmm.
and I was shocked how many people used FreshBooks there. And it came up. I was sitting at lunch, and one person said, hey, you know what? I know FreshBooks is a sponsor of Tech News Today. I use FreshBooks, and I love it. And then, like, three other people around the table were like, FreshBooks sponsors your podcast? Oh, that's cool. I use FreshBooks, too.
Is FreshBooks a Canadian company?
I
think they might be, because Amber MacArthur's the one
who
originally told us about FreshBooks.
Anyway, if you're a small business owner, a freelancer, consultant, anybody who does invoices, you're going to save yourself time, money, and frustration if you sign up for FreshBooks. You get 3 clients for free, so you can just try it out with a couple clients, see how you like it. And it's not much more expensive if you got more clients than that, which you probably do. Once you put the information in for your client, you've done all the work you're going to have to do on these invoices other than, like, pay me this month much by this date. They email out the invoices. They accept 11 different payment options. They send reminders if they're late on the payments. They do all of that stuff for you. And if you've got old-fashioned clients that you need, that, like, I have to have a paper invoice, for a little bit of extra money, they'll actually print it out and send it for you as well. So, I mean, you can be extra lazy like me.
It's like having a personal assistant.
Plus, if you say, I heard about it on Tech News Today, they will sign you up to possibly win a free birthday cake. Doesn't even have to be your birthday in order to win Every week, FreshBooks is giving away a cake to one of our audience members. So try them out. Sign
in
up
fact,
for the free version.
Eric Masiello tweeted us this morning and said, I was just notified I won a cake for signing up on FreshBooks using TNT as the promo code.
Congratulations,
yep,
Eric.
Yep.
So check them out, FreshBooks.com.
He got your birthday cake.
Yeah, that's where it went. And we thank him for their support of Tech News Today. Sony has got a MacBook killer out.
What?
Actually, it could be a MacBook Air killer. Sony's new VAIO Z, an ultra-portable laptop, 2.6 pounds, 1.18 kilograms, for those of you in the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it packs in a 256 gigabyte SSD, 1.3 megapixel webcam, matte LCD display, 1600 by 900, or an optional 1920 by 1080, and you can upgrade to full HD display as well. So this
it's kind of a MacBook Pro and an air killer.
I know. I can't decide which one it is. although it's only a solid state drive, so I guess it's really more of an air killer.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that's key about it is it comes, or you can get this thing called the Power Media Dock that plugs in to the USB 3.0 port. It's got two USB slots, one of which is 3.0, but that USB 3.0 slot also works as a Lightpeak connector. So this Power Media Dock uses Lightpeak protocol to give your laptop, your little ultra-portable laptop, both a Blu-ray drive and an AMD Radeon HD 6650 graphics chip with 1 gig of video RAM.
But why would they make it a USB port? Because then you can't use anything else that's Lightpeak enabled.
It's very Sony, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's Lightpeak, but you won't be able to use it for anything but the Power Media Dock.
Oh, yeah.
I think they're trying to save a port. I think they wanted to say, let's have two USB ports here, but we want to use Lightpeak because it's better for, you know, if we're going to have an AMD video card.
In the short term, it actually makes more sense because you can do more with USB ports. But in the long term, it might be kind of annoying.
Yeah, exactly. So this thing, I'm kind of salivating over. It's a little bit pricey, though. They haven't announced any U.S. availability. In Taiwan, you'll be able to pick up that 1080p model plus the dock for 94,800 Taiwanese. That's about $3,270 U.S. And that'll come in July. The U.K. is already offering it. You can get it in the U.K. without the dock for £1,434. So that's $2,294 U.S., and then the dock will run you an additional £400, so $640 U.S.
So that, I mean, that's...
It's pricey.
That's not air price.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not an air competitor.
Yeah.
No, this is not a bargain. but, man, does it do a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of having that 6650M graphics processor and a Blu-ray player available when I come home. I just plug that in. And all of a sudden, you know, I can play some pretty I can play some games on it.
Yeah, it's the mobile stuff that you don't really need to be mobile.
Yeah, you don't need that when you're walking around.
Yeah, you don't
and
want it to
just
make
got,
your...
It's got integrated Intel graphics when you're walking around. That's good enough. On to Google getting sued. French search engine OnePlus V is suing Google over alleged anti-competitive practices. Sound familiar to you? OnePlus V is one of the companies that led these prosecution... Or the encouragement of the French government and the European Union to probe Google over anti-competitive practices. OnePlus V operates a legal search group called ejustice.fr. They spurred that EU antitrust probe. Now they're going and suing them separately from that for the same reasons, essentially. They say that Google blacklisted 30 of their vertical search engines between 2007 and 2010, some of which have been whitelisted since, but that doesn't matter. They also complain about being forced to use Google search technology in order to be able to use Google AdSense.
This is going to sound familiar to a lot of people. They are certainly not the first company to accuse Google of doing this, but they're suing Google for more than anyone else has, about $418 million in damages, certainly the largest that Google has been possibly forced to pay in Europe.
295 million euros. And you know how much a euro is the gold in the United States. That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. And Google, of course, as Google does, says, we are looking forward to explaining this. That was their only retort
once
on this
matter.
Once
we figure out how,
you know what's going
to
be fun? Explaining this.
We're
but
totally
we're just not ready.
Looking forward to explaining
Have
this.
Have you heard of Google Plus? We're very busy right now.
Again, we've gone over this on the show before, but my take on this... Google's a search engine. They're not the only search engine you can use. They're not even built into your computer. Mm-hmm. They may be built into your browser, so maybe there's something there. But you don't have to buy ads on Google. And you and Google doesn't have to list anything in their search engine if they don't want to. It makes them a less useful search engine. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this I feel like this is different than Microsoft with Windows, which I also wasn't sure that that was antitrust either. Yeah. But at least I saw the argument. Here I don't see the argument. No one's forced to use Google.
So you don't think OnePlus V is going to get their $418 million then?
Well, I didn't say that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying what I think. Well, what the courts decide, who knows?
It's anybody's guess.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Finish up with a couple of wireless telephony competition stories. The FCC every year issues... I think they need somebody to help them with the names. The annual report and analysis of competitive market conditions with respect to mobile wireless, including commercial mobile services.
Sounds like a really good read.
A little wordy.
Yeah.
And essentially, this year, the report says nothing that different from last year. Pretty much, huh, wireless got more concentrated again. Weird. That's my summary of it. They refused for the first time last year. They refused to say whether the market had gotten more or less competitive. They just stayed out of it. This year, they stuck to that. They're like, we're just not going to talk about whether the market is competitive. They say the mobile wireless ecosystem is sufficiently complex and multifaceted that it would not be meaningful to try to make a single all-inclusive finding regarding effective competition.
Well, hold on a second.
Weasley.
They say it's so complex that... We don't even... What they're saying is, it's so complex that we just don't want to deal with this, is what it sounds like to me. I mean, AT&T is about to gobble up T-Mobile. That doesn't seem like an issue.
Let me break it down from their own stats.
Okay.
Four major U.S. wireless operators had 90% of U.S. subscribers. Doesn't seem that much more complex to me than that.
Yeah.
AT&T and Verizon, two, have 62% of the subscribers. Then the check out this for logical gymnastics. The FCC noted that, quote, a merger can potentially form a stronger provider that restrains competitors from engaging in anti-competitive behavior.
Okay, hold the phone.
So if we go from four majors to three, it'll get more competitive because the big provider will stop those little providers from their anti-competitive
behavior. So AT&T buys T-Mobile, for example, and that's good for everybody because then AT&T and T-Mobile don't have to compete with each other and cause friction for all involved.
AT&T will become so big
fuzzy math.
That Sprint and Verizon won't be anti-competitive.
I don't think I agree. FCC.
I'm not sure they understand.
No, I don't actually think that they understand anti-competitive behavior. Unless they just want less of it.
Yeah. Anyway, it's almost entirely weaselly. That would be... I can't escape that precise definition of this report. Meanwhile, LightSquared, which we've talked about before... wants to enter the wireless competition market in North America. They would like to put up satellites and beam wireless connectivity down onto the ground in the United States, and I believe Canada and Mexico eventually as well. We have reported on how there's been some concern about interference with GPS. LightSquared has kind of gone round and round with the agency in the U.S. that regulates GPS, but it seemed like they had come to an agreement about some changes LightSquared would make that would prevent at least most of the interference from happening with the GPS and keep it, you know, you're never going to be 100% interference free in anything anywhere, but this would make it acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
So thankfully Congress is getting involved.
Great.
Because it looked like we might have another competitor enter the market. Steve Austria of Ohio and Kevin Yoder of Kansas have ridden to defend the status quo. Leaning a little towards hyperbole, claiming that LightSquared is planning a, quote, ground-based mobile broadband system with a signal that is roughly 1 billion times more powerful than satellite-based GPS signals. That's just not accurate.
That's not true, but I mean, why is that bad?
Well, it could get rid of GPS if that were true, because it's adjacent to GPS. That part's true. The amendment requires LightSquared to prove that its planned pan-USA LTE network won't interfere with GPS systems before the FCC would be allowed to spend any money altering the company's license to enable it to build that network. So, unless they can prove a negative, we will not allow any other competitors into the space.
You know, it's interesting. LightSquared is saying our FCC filings go back to 2001. We've already brought up some of these potential issues. This is not new, people.
And they've worked through them.
Yeah, that was a decade ago.
The agencies that were most concerned
with
this, and we've talked about that on the show before. So this is just basically saying, you know what? We don't believe the scientists. Mm-hmm. We don't believe the people who actually know what's going on here. We don't trust them. We actually believe the people who contribute to our campaigns, and therefore we're going to stop competition from happening.
We fear what we do not understand. Therefore, this should not go through.
It's a clear case of the government interfering in order to prevent competitiveness, and that I do not like. So,
amen, Tom.
I'm moving on to NewsFuse. Watch what apps you have installed if you get pulled over while driving through the United States state of Arizona. Because last week's big LulzSec dump of Arizona police info apparently included some documents telling police to search iPhones for certain apps during traffic stops. OpenWatch, an app for surreptitiously recording, was called out as one of those apps that the police should look for, as were any speed trap apps. Now, neither of these apps are illegal, and it's questionable if searching a phone's apps at a traffic stop is legal either, but you are now warned, Arizona drivers.
All right, so last week we heard that Facebook was finally working on a long-awaited iPad app, and then yesterday we even heard that maybe GeoHots was working behind the scenes on it, and now we hear, actually, it might not even be iOS at all, it might be an HP TouchPad app. TechCrunch has actually posted published photos of this app supposedly running on webOS. Facebook reps admit that the photos are legit, but say this app was not built by Facebook, but by HP.
But with the contract to Facebook to build it.
Heck if I know. I just want to see it.
Over 500,000 Android devices are now activated each day worldwide, and activations are growing at a rate of 4.4% week over week. That's what Andy Rubin says, Android head honcho. It's quite the milestone. Since last month at I.O., that number was only 400,000, up from 300,000 daily activations in December and 100,000 activations a year ago. So they're in hockey stick land.
MySpace for sale. Price reduced. Hear all about it.
No, thanks. I just want to get home.
As low as 30 million.
I just want to get to my bus stop.
Or
now.
As high as 35 million.
MySpace.
Not interested?
No,
some people are interested, actually. This is a lot less, of course, than the 100 million that News Corp was hoping that MySpace was worth. It's two lucky current bidders. You may not have heard of them before. Specific Media, they're an advertising network, and Golden Gate Capital, an equity firm. News Corp is hoping to complete a sale to somebody, anybody, by Thursday, which just happens to be its fiscal year end. Sources say that Pink Slips will be part of this too, possibly 50% of staff or more.
Ouch. A group called the YGN Ethical Hacker Group. We got some white hats out there now. Has identified potential security holes in Apple's developer website. The group identified three potential security issues on the site, including arbitrary URL redirects, cross-site scripting, and HTTP response splitting. A phishing attack could give hackers access to a user's iTunes account because it's the same as the developer's account. And the group told Apple about the flaws back in April. Apple said, "We take these very seriously, but they have yet to fix them."
Intel's Director of Product and Technology Media Relations, Bill Kirkhost, told This Is My Next that the Atom Clover Trail platform and its Clover View processor are being designed to work with Windows 8 and timed to release in the second half of 2012, which will meet or even beat Windows 8. Clover View will be one of Intel's first Atom chips to be built on a 32-nanometer manufacturing and power tablets, netbooks, slider devices, and much, much more.
You know what's funny?
What?
Malware.
Yeah, it is.
Malware's all kind of lulls, am I right? As an example, packed away in the last dump of LulzSec data was a directory named Bootable USB that contained a variety of malware, including Trojans and worms. However, the torrent has since been cleaned up and reissued through anonymous channels. Now, that's customer service.
With Apple's Mac Store, all sales are final. Unless you're a really, really ticked off editor, that is. The Next Web reports several users in an Apple support discussions thread say they got a refund on their purchase of Final Cut Pro X, or 10, as Apple wants us to call it, after writing in to complain how crappy they think the program is. Woo, what a stinker. We hate it. Apple's known to make exceptions to the no refunds policy from time to time. This looks to be one of those times.
On to the randomizer. The randomizer. There's the randomizer.
Randomizer.
It's a random start time, didn't it?
Yeah.
Industrial designer and tinkerer Marcus Kaiser spent the better part of a year building and experimenting with two devices that harness the sun's power in the world's harshest climates called the first one he calls a sun cutter, a low-tech light cutter that uses a large ball lens to focus the sun's rays onto a surface that's moved by a cam-guided system. So it's kind of like a 3D printer. And then he began to examine the process of 3D printing, merging two of the desert's most abundant resources, nearly unlimited quantities of sand, and created the Solar Sinter, a device that melts sand to create 3D objects out of glass. So it is, in fact, a 3D printer that prints glass out of sand.
Wow.
So like little glass pigs and those little glass...
little glass pigs, that's glass the best apples. You can do. It prints glass and Tom goes, like those little glass pigs?
Like at a truck stop. Truck stops are going to love this out in the desert.
A snow globe made out of sand. With sand inside. No, that's cool. I mean, you could, maybe if you were going to be really green, you could build an off-the-grid home, and all your windows could be made of sand.
This is actually really awesome.
Yeah,
and incredibly
really great.
Innovative. Huh. I'm sure there's going to be some sort of copyright violation soon for printing a glass pig. That
you can't do that.
You have the rights to. But anyway, good job. Nice stuff.
Very cool.
On to the calendar.
But nothing's working.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay. Not that counts. Happy Tau Day, everybody. It's Tau Day.
Hey, what's
it hasn't been Tau Day since this day last year. Yeah. Okay.
Not towel, Tau.
Tau.
Yeah.
T-A-U.
I actually know, but I'm just setting you up.
I know you know, but if you're not familiar, where have you been? There's actually a movement afoot online to celebrate Tau. It's approximately 6.28, so you could think of it as, that's kind of like pi. Everyone knows pi is 3.14, right? Well, pi is the ratio of circumference to diameter of a circle. Tau is circumference divided by radius, which is way cooler.
It actually is. There's a lot of better math that you can do with tau over pi. Plus, tau is 2 pi.
Yes.
And what's better than 1 pi? 2 pi.
2 pi. Yeah. Unless there's 3. And that is something else entirely. Opera 11.5. So they went from 11.1 up 0.4. versions to 11.5 browser has launched with speed dial extensions, password sync, a couple of the bells and whistles. So Opera fans will be happy about that. Game Lab Conference is kicking off in Barcelona tomorrow. That's June 19th. Also tomorrow, 29th. Angry Birds... June 29th. Thank you. Also June 29th, tomorrow, Angry Birds is coming to Windows Phone. So it's almost the last place in the world that Angry Birds hasn't already infiltrated. Congratulations, Windows Phone. Zynga is planning to file for an IPO as early as tomorrow, according to TechCrunch Report. A couple other sources are also saying the same thing. They're going to raise between $1.5 to $2 billion at a $15 to $20 billion valuation. And Windows 8 is to be released to manufacturing by April. That's according to a not-so-crazy rumor offered by ZDNet's Mary Jo Foley. She says trusted sources tell her that, hey, they're on track to be released by April. By the way, RTM is the final version of a product just before it reaches consumers. So, looking good.
Mary Jo usually has good sources, too.
Yeah, she does.
On to voicemail, we got a call from deep in Alberta regarding the legality of DDoS.
Hi, this is Michael from Lethbridge, Alberta. Anyway, about DDoS attacks, what happens when Leo puts a website up on his radio station and brings a site down? Is that not a DDoS attack? Hmm. Could he not get sued or charged for something similar? Just curious. Thank you. Hi.
Okay, so what you get in trouble with low orbit ion cannon, for instance, is you're running a piece of software that is making thousands and thousands and thousands of requests per second.
Right.
So you are intentionally DDoSing.
Yes.
Right. There's intention.
It's the intent.
And there's demonstration that you're doing more than just one visit or even just hitting reload over and over.
Mm-hmm.
What Leo does when he mentions something on Tech Guy, or it happens on other shows, the slash dot effect, stuff like that, is they say a link out and then a lot of people decide to go to it. There's no intention to bring the site down. In fact, it's quite the opposite. And it may or may not go down because that's not the point. So that the activity isn't meant to bring it down.
In fact, when that happens, it's always everyone's disappointed because people are flooding to the website because it sounds really cool.
Yeah.
And you wish that their server load could handle it.
So if Leo said, let's bring the site down, everybody go there right now, that
would be a little more of a gray area.
I mean, because he's not...
It's still a little
everybody's
different.
Still only visiting it once, but there is some intention there. So I don't know. That could be interesting, but he's not... Don't worry. He's not in any trouble for giving out a link.
Yeah.
On to the email. Justin wrote in and said, on episode 272, a caller mentioned that they'd like to see innovation around the software of television, specifically mentioning multiple camera angles. I agree with the panel, basically suggesting it's more trouble than it's worth for the user. And we also got some directors wrote in and like, look, I get paid to pick camera angles.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a lot harder than it looks. Let the professionals do it. And I agree with those. But back to Justin. He says, I still agree with the caller that there's room for innovation. A simpler and more useful feature would be the ability to control overlays. And I think he means graphics. For example, when I'm watching football, I'd find the league scores ticker to be generally annoying, so I'd like to just turn them off. Basically, take Google TV, give it an Apple UI, and then separate video overlays and program metadata in a separate data channel that the user can manipulate. Like computer software, the content provider could include default settings in the data channel so users don't have to mess around if they don't want to, but the option is there for those who want it. And come to think of it, maybe it's a way for online content providers to innovate and give us a better experience than traditional broadcast media.
Yeah, I mean, what if you could overlay chat, you know, on sort of like a right-hand rail of any Twitch show? Some people would want that. Many people might not, but it would be nice to have the option. Or let's say you want to watch a baseball game just clean. You don't want any tickers. You don't want to know what's going on in another game. I like that information,
awesome.
But that could be really distracting for other people. It would be cool to have...
Fantasy, actually. You run the risk anytime you're watching, like on a football day where there's five games going on at once. I always have to cover up the corner of the screen
because
I don't want to know, you know, what's going on in other games or if you just want to watch it later.
Yeah.
You
know?
I like the idea of being able to customize the on-screen. Like, some people put the score across the top. Some people put it in the corner. Some people put it on the left. For me to be able to pick, like, I want it over there. And I want it to give me this information. Balls and strikes and outs, nothing else. You know, you don't have to give me everything under the sun. I think that's a good idea, Justin.
Yeah, even if it's a small amount of people using it, they would be a happy group of people. Next email from Jeff Nestor. It's Jeff COS in our chat realm. Good afternoon
Jeff
and great
COS.
Show, says Jeff. Just a thought on the rise in use of tablets and e-readers among Latino-Hispanic consumers. How much of it is simply due to the abundance of Spanish language materials, newspapers, magazine, and books? Seems like anybody would love to have all their news and entertainment reading in their native language, my two cents.
Nailed it, Jeff. I can't believe I didn't think about this. When you go to a Barnes & Noble or a Borders, the Spanish language section, if it exists at all, is very small.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can suddenly get access to unlimited Spanish language versions of all the books I want, of course I'm going to buy an e-reader.
That makes so much sense.
Thank you for enlightening us, Jeff. Appreciate that. All right, and thanks to everybody else who enlightened us with stories on Reddit. Technewstoday.reddit.com is where you can submit stories for our consideration and vote them up and down. Voting helps. If nothing else, you could just tell us which ones you're interested in us talking about. J. Joe Hall 2000, Flash Cider, Cletus, Patrick Rigby, Small French Guy, Crazy K 4952, Dagomer 34, Patrick Rigby again, Pi Spud, Larry Ortiz, all submitted stories today. So did a bunch of other people. Thanks to everybody who submits. We've got 858 Redditors working on the show. And we pay attention to it.
We absolutely do.
We pay attention to it for stories we may have missed elsewhere, but we also pay attention to which ones you're voting up because we're like, oh, people are really interested in that. Maybe we should throw that in the show. Also, I think we have a date for the new studio.
Yeah. So are we going to say the date right now?
Should we? Is that jinxing it if we say it?
Well, I don't know. I just wasn't sure because we're going to be at Comic-Con.
I know.
We're planning to
be. Well, that pretty much tells them.
I guess so.
Close to where the date is. Yeah, so we're targeting July 24th now. So get your brick orders in.
July 24th is a Sunday, so TWIT would be the first show that launches our new studio move. And if all goes well, that would mean that TNT would start in the new studio on Monday the 25th.
Yeah, so check it out, bricks.twit.tv. If you would like to have your message enshrined forever in the TWIT studio, go to bricks.twit.tv and buy a brick. Thanks, everybody, for watching. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, or you can give us a call. You can just say hi or leave us a nice short message you'd like us to play on the show.
Do your best R2-D2 impression.
From Mike from Alberta did today. 260-TNT-SHOW. That's the phone number. We'll see you tomorrow.